Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
But where we are constantly shifts and changes. And as I gain more power in the world, I have bigger obligations, you know? So that maybe when I was a young girl, I had the obligation to listen and to remember the stories my mother told me. You know, now, you know, somebody who has access to editing and publishing, for example, I have the obligation to help young Indigenous storytellers.
That's the voice of author and educator Dr. Deanna Redder. On this week's show, Sylvia interviews Deanna about the obligation of stories, so stay tuned.
You are listening to Latin Waves, and your host, Sylvia Richardson. We are delighted this morning to be with Dr. Deanna Redder. She is a Cree Métis scholar and chair of the Department of First Nations Studies. Thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Redder.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, as an Indigenous person, I grew up surrounded by stories, and it took me a lifetime to realize the importance of the gift that was being given. Can we talk a little bit about the way that stories have informed and form our way of being as Indigenous communities? I think there's a lot of connections and similarities across Indigenous people all over the world.
I completely agree. And just like you, I grew up with a lot of stories around me because my mother was just an amazing storyteller. And every day of my life, she would tell me stories that were completely new to me. Often they featured her family. She was the youngest of 10, living in northern Saskatchewan in LaRonge. And I felt very connected to my family because she told me everything about, everything she remembered as a child and everything about her community and some specific stories as well about her parents. So it's certainly, I think, so influential. But I also just always, as a literature professor, I also like to encourage everyone to realize that reading stories are on the same continuum as listening to stories, that they're not completely separate and really one informs the other. And so I think sometimes if you grow up not close to family members who tell stories, but you have those stories written down, that's another way of being able to share in the wealth of, you know, Indigenous storytelling practices.
You know, when I grew up, in a time of war, and one of the ways that we survived the terror outside our doors was my uncle used to tell stories inside the house, and so there'd be bombs dropping outside, and he would create this sort of in-world cocoon, you know, where we would be enlightened, you know, delighted and entertained by stories. So there is also a science behind the stories, you know, how a story can heal anxiety or the fear by learning about other persons. So in my family, every person that's died is remembered. There's not many photos, but there's stories about them, the stories about the things they did, the crazy things, the brilliant things. And so it's this way of uniting. How do you feel the importance of stories now perhaps permeating the academy and informing the way we do research? Because ultimately for me, research is storytelling, and you know, finding the science is just, you know, finding the stories. And how do we learn to see the world anew?
That is such an amazing kind of tradition that you've got in your family. And I realized that was something my mother was doing, even though I didn't realize it. There are a lot of stories that center around my grandmother, my cookum, who was a healer, you know, a medicinalist. And in fact, mom would talk about it was legal at the time, really, to be using country medicines, you know, indigenous medicines. And so my mom would often be the carrier to sneak them over to someone's house so they wouldn't get in trouble with other people, like the police or the authorities. And certainly my grandfather was part of those stories, but he always was a much quieter man and much less a focus of what she talked about. And I came to realize, really only in my adulthood, that my mother wanted to provide for me a role model of strong a woman who can go against kind of the expectations or the, you know, the low expectations and actually really be powerful. And I certainly know of the healing that you mentioned when I think about the experiences in my own family. Certainly as in research, I think it's Lee Miracle who says that, research without stories is just dead. And I think that's something Indigenous scholars find really important.
When I think about my history in Latin America and, there's a history of displacement that we are all very aware of, and Indigenous people throughout Avia Yala, which is, you know, to colonizers is Latin America, to us is Avia Yala. It's been marked and imprinted by multitude ways of surviving. And when I think about Turtle Island, I think about the importance of remembering not just who we are in the midst of chaos, in the midst of storms, but remembering the people who have informed our ways of being, our ways of seeing. And so I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the importance of telling the stories of those who have been invisibilized, who have been made to become invisible.
Well, in fact, that's very much the focus of my talk on Wednesday about Jim Brady, who is a very well-known and successful Métis activist. He worked with the famous five, as part of the famous five. These are Métis activists in the 1930s who were able to secure land grants for Métis people in the province of Alberta. He then went on to work as an activist in Saskatchewan to much less success, which had to do with the reception, I suppose, of those radical ideas. But he was still a well-regarded leader, and many interviews of people who knew Jim Brady talk about, you know, how well-read he was, how intelligent he was, how compassionate he was, how furious he would get when he saw our people being treated badly. And then also someone else to remember is Absalom Halkett, or Abby Halkett, who was Jim's mining partner. They were prospectors together, but he was also a counselor of the LaRonge Indian Band. He was a member of the LaRonge Indian Band. And they both went missing without a trace in 1967, something that caught the attention of the authorities probably about middle of June, a week after they were dropped off at a lake, Lower Foster Lake in northern Saskatchewan. Their boss came to find them and found their tent and found their food, in the tent, and some evidence of them being there, but they couldn't find them. And there was an RCMP investigation for about 2 weeks and before they gave up. And then community members and friends of Jim and Abby, who spent the entire summer of 67, looking all over and around Lower Foster Lake, looking for Jim and Abby. And so they've been missing, and missing in many ways, not just, they went missing without a trace, but there has been very little memory in sort of mainstream Canada of the contributions that Jim Brady has made, or even who Abby Halkett was. And I realized as well that, you know, we've been missing them, you know, the contributions that they would have made. I think that the effects on the family and the communities have, you know, continue on and been really troubled people who felt that it was so obvious, especially Indigenous people, that Jim and Abby had been murdered and that there was no investigation into a crime. And so a big part of the pleasure in revisiting these places and meeting people who knew Jim and Abby and getting permission from their children to proceed is really being able to remember what they did accomplish and kind of remind people how important they were.
That's beautiful. And what a perfectly appropriate story to tell, you know, at a moment in history where we see so many Indigenous people in Turtle Island rising up, not only to defend their right to exist and coexist with nature, their right to be respected, you know, in their relationships to the land, in their relationships to others. And also, I think, to learn also the wisdom, you know, the ancient wisdom of many mature cultures that have been teaching us, not just about, you know, the way to coexist, but also the responsibilities, right, of being a good ancestor. And so as we come to a close in our interview, I wonder if you could maybe talk a little bit about the way you invite your students to be in relationship, to be, to nurture and cultivate a co-creative relationship with each other, with themselves, and also with nature, with the, you know, with everything that surrounds us, because we are also part of nature.
I think that is such an important lesson. I do want to mention one thing first, though, and that is that I've been undergoing this investigation with many community members, but my closest research partners are my cousin Eric Bell, who is the founder of the LaRange Emergency Medical Services, as well as a member of the LaRange Indian Band, and then and a friend from Australia who's actually an anti-corruption specialist in dealing with mining. His name is Michael Nest, and he's written a book that Eric and I have contributed to, that was still sort of in process in publication. But he says at the end of the book that I just think is beautiful, is that when he came to Canada as an Australian, and when he thought about the quintessential Canadian, you know, he might think of Montreal or Toronto. And in fact, this is what he's learned through the research that we've undertaken, is how vital this, you know, Cree Métis world was, you know, and he could easily imagine Jim and Abby in a tent, you know, maybe lighting up a cigarette and talking through, you know, politics and community needs, and, you know, as well as the environment and the way to preserve Indigenous ways of knowing and being, and that was as vital. And I think when I want to encourage students to learn about Indigenous ways of knowing being, it's not to think of something reclaiming in the past, but it's something that continues on and transforms, you know, continually. And and that going to an urban Indigenous poet, you know, is another way of accessing Indigenous understandings of the world.
Now, Dr. Ryder will be hosting a talk on Wednesday, January 15th at 6 p.m. at the Siegel Graduate School of Business, and is titled Missing Jim Brady and Avi Hackett. What would you hope attendees would walk away with who listened to your talk?
The main title of it is The Obligations of Stories, and we will focus on looking for Jim and Abby. But I also guess I want us to think about what kind of obligations we have when we are gifted with being shared a story, you know, the obligation to listen, the obligation to remember, maybe the obligation to make sure not to tell other people's stories unless you've been invited to, the constant ability to listen, to make sure you're not overstepping. And I think that, as you said, there's so much wealth in our stories. But I think I look forward to getting a chance to think through these ideas with other people.
Thank you so much for being with us this morning, Dr. Redder. It's always a pleasure. As a speaker and a researcher, you know, we share not only a responsibility, I think, for how we invite others into our world. What are some of the things that you cultivate on a daily basis as a writer, as a speaker, as a teacher, that help you continue that, to deepen that relationship?
I think that one thing I've come to realize is that acknowledging our positions, you know, is so embedded in local traditional acknowledgements. You know, if you think about those kinds of practices that we've learned from, you know, the Tsleil-Waututh and Musqueam, Squamish, Stolo peoples, about explaining where you are, you know, where you come from, and as you know, is the territory that you're on. But where we are constantly shifts and changes. And as I gain more power in the world, I have bigger obligations, you know, so that maybe when I was a young girl, I had the obligation to listen and to remember the stories my mother told me. You know, now, you know, somebody who has access to editing and publishing, for example, I have the obligation to help young Indigenous storytellers, you know, get their work into publication. So, I mean, I think that that's something I've learned is that every day it shifts a little bit, you know, because where I sit in the planet shifts a little bit, you know, as I get older and let's hope wiser, but also as you know, in the university when, you know, it's so filled with maybe problematic practices, but it's also full of opportunity, and it's my obligation to open up those opportunities for younger people so they can walk through those doors.
It is such a wonderful acknowledgement to note that we are in the unceded territory of the Musqueam, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Stolo peoples territories. And it's also, I think, important to remember that even the words, the language, inform a different way of seeing. You know, I find having had to learn English to be able to be seen and understood in this land, I see the importance of the word, you know, of having my own language, of having access to new language, to new words. How do we invite the world in a way that is gentle and yet does not shirk away from owning our responsibility to decolonize the ways we have been trained to see the world, the ways we have been domesticated into thinking nature is something we manipulate and objectified? How do we, you know, invite others in a gentle and yet transformative way?
Like, I can't speak for other people, and I certainly see the value of the work that you're doing. That's certainly a beautiful way of reaching a lot of people. To me, it's the classroom studying literature, you know, and giving a chance to share stories, but also maybe show where the tripwires are, you know, caution people about some of the assumptions that maybe reading in standard literary classes tell you, that, you know, that we're the, I mean, our interpretations are the most important, you know, when the about the who owns the stories, you know, that somehow if we've bought it in a book, it all completely belongs to us. And so I'm able to kind of share that slowly within the classroom. But I think there's many other ways to teach those lessons. And I'm learning every day what other people are doing.
Thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Redder will be speaking on Wednesday, January 15th at 6 p.m. at the Segal Graduate School of Business. The title of her talk is The Obligation of Stories, Missing Jim Brady and Abby Hackett. Thank you so much. What will be your parting words for our audience?
Thank you, and keep warm. I it looks like there won't be snow on Wednesday night, and so but we'll see, won't we?
Snow, rain, or shine, it will be a wonderful gift to be in your presence. Thank you for your talk, and thank you for your words, for the beautiful weights that you're writing inspires people.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And again, please join us on Wednesday, January 15th at 6 p.m. at the Siegel Graduate School of Business. Admission is free, so please register early because there is limited seating. Take care. Thank you again, Dr. Redder.
Thanks so much.
To finish out the show, I'm going to play a song by Dana Lyons called Drop of Water. Bye for now.
There's a drop of water on the wall, and the drop's about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle's flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream, busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, the wildness in my soul, and for once in life, I know I'm not alone. For the mountains make our bones, with the oceans in our blood, our feet planted, planted firmly in the mud. We are alive, the burning embers in our eyes, the tingling touch upon our skin. And in the heat of passion, we begin to understand that we are of this land, that we are part of Earth, and when it's threatened, we will fight for all we're worth. We watch the dam come crashing down, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free. Drops about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle's flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream, busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free.
We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Visit Latin Waves Media to hear previous shows, to access resources, or support our efforts towards social change via community project engagement. Thank you, and bye for now.